What's up, everybody? This is Nick Bacone of the Straight Shooters Podcast. This Thanksgiving week, we decided to take a break from live recording, so we'll be uploading some classic audio greatness for your listening pleasure. And last but not least on this Thanksgiving week is our deep dive from a TV special, The Main Event. It was the fourth edition of The Main Event, not to be confused with Saturday Night's Main Event, which was a staple of WWF TV in the 80s and early 90s. This Main Event special, titled The Main Event 4, was aired on November 23rd, 1990. That was one night after the 1990 Survivor Series pay-per-view, which at that time was on Thanksgiving night. That was also the first Survivor Series pay-per-view I ever saw, and the first one I watched live on TV. And of course, right after I taped that pay-per-view, we taped The Main Event 4 right after it. That TV show featured the Ultimate Warrior defending his WWF title against Ted DiBiase. That's when Macho Man attacked the Warrior dastardly fashion, as only the Macho Man did back then. We also deep dove into Sergeant Slaughter versus Nikolai Volkoff, which never got started, actually. Mr. Perfect versus the Big Boss Man, and Rick Martel versus Tito Santana. This was a Nick Bacone special because I wanted to cover this event right after. I think we did a Survivor Series 98, so we did this right after that because we weren't going to do a deep dive in Survivor Series 90. So this was second place for me in my heart. So get ready for the Main Event 4 deep dive with me and Vaughn Johnson. Enjoy the show.
Oh, Shooters Radio Universe!
It's a new day! Yes, it is!
I am Vaughn Johnson.
You got me mad now.
You know, you got a bicycle.
Feeling good.
Well, the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of...
Let me do this again. Oh, it's live, pal. Sorry.
We ride the bicycle in this arena.
With my man, Pots and Pans, Nick Bacone.
That's me.
I don't know what the kid is that was riding it, but he ain't on it when they brought it to the ring.
Smile at you and kick your face off.
I'm down with that.
Kick you some mad! And I have half the brain that you do.
But I don't like it when things aren't going my way.
Don't you dare be sour!
He don't know nothing else.
You know that wrestling.
Right, he know that wrestling, bro.
Give me a hell yeah. I said give me a hell yeah.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen out there in internet land, and welcome to episode 261 of The Straight Shooters, which is available wherever podcasts are found. My name is Vaughn Johnson, and I'm joined as always by my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Bacone, a Philly voice and Philly influencer, and we got yet another fantastic show ahead of us tonight here on the eve of Thanksgiving 2020, the most bizarre and wild Thanksgiving in our lifetimes. Typically on Thanksgiving Eve, we're at the bar, at least I am, and most people are at the bar on Thanksgiving Eve, because surprisingly, Thanksgiving Eve is like one of the biggest bar nights of the year, like even more so or in the same ballpark as New Year's Eve, which is, I know, some surprising for some, but for whatever reason, Thanksgiving Eve is a massive bar night, and a lot of people are upset out there because they can't go to the bar and get, you know, trashed on Thanksgiving Eve. But hey, man, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, bro, so stay your ass home, all right? You'll be all right. You can drink at home. But we're here on Thanksgiving Eve, and we're going to do another deep dive about a holiday, sort of a holiday theme show. Not really a holiday theme, but it's around the holidays, around Thanksgiving, back in 1990. We're going to talk about not Saturday night's main event, but the main event, the fourth installment of the main event, to be exact, which actually took place, was taped on October 30th, 1990, but it didn't air for almost a full month later until November 23rd, 1990. And for those who don't remember, this show had a lot of stuff happen on the show, but one thing that is probably, the show is probably known for, is for what happened that didn't actually air. This show is the show where the Rockers went against the Hart Foundation for the WWE Tag Team Championships in a 2 out of 3 falls match, but of course the top rope broke during the match. The match was a cluster, and the match, even though the Rockers won the titles, the match never aired, and the Rockers never technically won. They were never recognized as the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. But despite that snafu, there were other things that happened on the show, including a WWF Championship match with the Ultimate Warrior and Ted DiBiase, Mr. Perfect, Big Boss Man, Rick Martel, and Tito Santana. There's a lot of stuff that happened on the show. But we're going to dig all into it, dive deep into it here on the show. But before we get into all of that, Nick, I got to do my weekly check-in with you, my guy. How are you doing tonight, my good brother?
I am spending Thanksgiving Eve like I do most Thanksgiving Eves at home. I did, like, you're right, Thanksgiving Eve, like a party goer's dream, you know, and I'm just not feeling it. I went out like a few years ago. It's just a ridiculous night.
It is.
I'm not necessarily a fan of that scene that where it gets like that crazy. I mean, I've been out there and I've been through, you know, these scenes, plenty of them when growing up, but you know, once I hit my 30s, I'm good. I'll stay home on Thanksgiving Eve and watch Survivor Series stuff. That's how I roll.
So I'd rather be drunk than watch Survivor Series stuff. But it's funny you said it, because I went out on Thanksgiving Eve last year to a bar that's usually not super packed anyway, and it was pretty much the same last year on Thanksgiving Eve. So me and my girlfriend, we went out and we had a good time. Let's just say that. But I don't really remember going out on Thanksgiving Eve prior to that too much. At least before I can remember, I might have, but I don't really, you know, vividly recall. I definitely did it last year, and I had a good time. I mean, I try to avoid the big crazy crowds anyway, so I'm sure you probably ran into a couple here and there, because that's just what happens sometimes mm-hmm. when you're growing up in your 20s, and you're like, you don't know any better. You just go out and you're like, oh, big crowd, let's go over there. And you're like, oh, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, right. You know, opening a pub that same year right in my backyard where I used to live and grow up, and just seeing a lot of people that, you know, I thought were in my rearview mirror after elementary.
Mini high school reunion?
In high school. And, you know, that's, I didn't hate high school. I wasn't one of those that couldn't wait to get out of it. But there's a certain population of people I went to high school with that I would like to just stay away from, and a lot of them were there that night, so I'm like, oh great,
that's funny you say that. That probably happens to a lot of people who go back to their hometowns, because they probably, you know, visit their parents, you know what I'm saying, back in their hometowns. Let's say they moved away or moved to maybe even a different neighborhood, just, you know, something like that. But they go back to their parents' neighborhood, and maybe they go to the bar that's near their parents' house, and at that bar is a bunch of people they went to high school with. And that's when it's like, oh, remember this guy? He thought he was the coolest kid in high school. Now he's just regular dude, you know, hanging out at the bar, you know, reliving high school days.
In 2013, my whole high school reunion, my 10-year reunion, was built around the Thanksgiving weekend, since everyone was going to be in the area. And I wound up not going to my reunion. It was, you know, at another bar / restaurant that was in the area. So I don't know if that'll happen in 2023 for our 20-year reunion. We'll see how that unfolds in the next few years. Hopefully by 2023 we'll have a bunch of people that understand that pandemics are not to be messed with.
I hope that happens in 2021. We get 2023.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I hope this time next year, but, in 2021, I'm at the bar. We're not doing the podcast next year on the Wednesday. I'm at the bar, actually. We take the week off.
Yeah.
Like that week. Yeah. And I'm at the bar having a good time, having a few adult beverages.
Like, yeah, I was just putting it in perspective with my reunion. That's why I said 2023. But yeah, 2021 hopefully will be a lot different, look a lot different than it does now. In a good way. We'll, you know, pray.
Thanksgiving Eve is a wild night, because it's like you said, it's like you get to go out on it's like an extra Friday. It's like you get to go out, get trashed, then you wake up the next day, you don't have to go to work because it's Thanksgiving, and then you still get, you can go out on Friday, you can go out on Saturday. And then you got Black Friday, which people, I'm sure, oh man, I don't know how these stores are going to do Black Friday this year with with COVID, you know. And I'm sure people are still going to go to these stores and be trying to trample people for TVs and stuff like that.
Of course.
But it's just wild.
An American tradition.
Oh, yeah.
It's not exact. Like, I mean, we've seen videos elsewhere, not just in America, but I think I've only seen them in the States.
Yeah. For those that are unfamiliar, you know, if you're not from the States, we do have international listeners. Yeah, well, our Thanksgiving's coming up this week. It's coming up tomorrow, actually, as we record this Wednesday night. I know Canada, Thanksgiving is like October. But
yeah,
some people look more forward to the day after Thanksgiving so they can spend all their money on TVs and couches or whatever.
Yeah.
And people go to department stores like Walmart or Target or whatever, and they were out there. Some people are out there, and like, some stores have the Thanksgiving night sale. Like, they open up Thanksgiving night. Forget Black Friday, it's Black Thursday. Like, so they eat dinner and wait in line at a department store at like 7-8 o'clock at night, and it's like, wow, you just can't be with your family at all. But
there may be people that are having Thanksgiving dinner right now on Wednesday night,
just to get it out the way so they
can go on Thursday.
That's real talk, though. People do that, and they'll wait in line, and it's a gang of people out there waiting. And as soon as they open them doors, people literally will run through the doors. They might trample each other. They might get into fights. You know, people will literally fight each other over TVs. And like I said, if you're not from here, you may not be familiar. But if you're from here, you know full well, because you've seen it on WorldStar, you've seen it on Twitter, you've seen it on the internet somewhere. People rolling on the floor in Caldor somewhere, or something like that. I don't know if Caldor even exists, but you know what I'm saying. Some Best Buy or, you know, whatever department store, BJ's or whatever. I don't know. Rolling on the floor. Middle-aged women and men and women fighting over this Panasonic TV that's on sale for like $150. Like, you know, $150 as opposed to the $400 it normally is. So yeah, it's a wild time. But I don't know, like I said, I don't know how it's going to be this week, because of the pandemic. I mean, I wouldn't go to no damn store this year. Like,
nah,
I'm not going to no store.
I'm in the gift card business this year.
Right. Like, I mean, I've been to stores because, you know, you got to buy some stuff sometimes. But, like, I'm not going to Black Friday shopping. No. Like, I'm anticipating thousands of people being out.
Yep. Not even a thought in my mind. No, I mean, it really isn't any year. Like, we used to have this tradition in my family where we would go, you know, to Center City, see the light show and do all this stuff. And maybe some shopping, but not a lot. My parents would do. They wouldn't like finish their shopping that day. They would maybe start it if they haven't started already. But that was kind of like a family tradition that we had. And as me and my sister got older, we didn't really want to do that anymore. My sister is starting to do it with her kids, so they can't really do it this year. But I mean, that's kind of like what we did. That was our tradition, and you don't really see that anymore, because now it's all about those deals. It's all about these videos we've seen for years. That
right. Just, even though Cyber Monday is a
reminder,
thing, like,
yeah, it's a reminder to me. I made a good choice staying away from that type of stuff.
Cyber Monday is a thing. Like, you can just do a lot of stuff online. So
good.
So you yeah, could. that's what we suggest. Do your shopping online this year. The deals are just as good. Yeah, you might not get it instantly, and it might take a little longer because of the pandemic, but you'll get it eventually. But, you know, for everybody out there who, you know, celebrating Thanksgiving, do it safely. Hopefully you're not around a bunch of people. I know a lot of people traveled this year, got on planes and trains and all that. Good luck to you, bro. Like, honestly, like,
yeah.
Like, good luck, man. I hope I hope everything works out for everybody and we don't see a massive spike 2 weeks from now.
Well,
which we've already seen a spike. It's already bad. Hopefully it's not worse in 2 weeks.
If I could bet on that, I would, and I'm sure I would take the the over, whatever number that is. I'd be like, up over. But
I don't think you'd win any money, because I think that would be most people's bets.
Yeah, be even, break even.
Right.
I wanted to make a betting pun there because I'm still hurting from my Monday night parlay. I had 3 of 4. People scored a touchdown in that Monday night football game. I was so close to winning $2,500. And
damn.
It's just the Rams.
That'd have been a nice little absolutely Christmas present.
Yeah, exactly. Present. Exactly. So I already put my parlay down for the Cowboys Washington football team game tomorrow night, so I have another four that I'm going for. Hopefully it's an offensive game, but man, that was like one of those things where I wanted to cry.
I feel you, bro. $2,500. That's some gifts.
Yeah,
some
that
people,
was
man.
Only that was only a $5 bet too. So
oh wow, it came up $2,500 pretty much. Man,
yeah, man. So yeah, I'm still feeling that, and tomorrow. That's all I'm going to be thinking about. That's I'm going to be zoned in on the Dallas Washington game tomorrow. That's going to be my Thanksgiving, hopefully.
Well, good luck to you, my friend.
I appreciate that.
I wish you luck. Hope and you get that $2,500.
I will post it if I do win, because I do post my winning bets here and there. But man, Monday night that was
that's devastating.
It was just as bad as watching Monday Night Raw.
We ain't gonna talk about Monday Night Raw on this show. Nor are we gonna talk about Survivor Series. Even though, did you watch Survivor Series? I mean, I'm sure you did.
I did. Here and there, you know, like as usual, it's kind of a habit. Just put it on, and I try and pay attention as much as I can. But you know, I do stuff on the internet. I'm like running a website, so you know, I try to pay attention as much as I can. So yeah, I watched it. It was all right.
Yeah, exactly. It was all right. I mean, again, Survivor Series just has no juice. I had it on. I wasn't really fully paying full attention to it. You know?
Yeah.
Whatever. It happened. And we'll move on and we'll never watch it again.
Exactly. Like, no one's going to watch the Undertaker ceremony again, by the way. Maybe only for the pallbearer hologram, but that's it.
No. It's just wild that it happened with no fans in the stands. Yeah. Obviously, it had to happen that way. But,
yeah, and the fact that they just decided to do it now instead of just push it off, like, until fans were there. That's just kind of surprising.
That might not be until, like, next June.
I guess they were hell-bent on 30 years. We can't do 30 and a half years. Like, we can't do that. But
yeah, making a nice marketable 30 years.
Yeah.
All right, well, 30 years. Speaking of 30 years ago.
Yes.
Right before, or right around the time The Undertaker debuted in WWF, at least technically by the time it taped, it was before he debuted. By the time it aired, I think it was a little after.
The day after.
The day after, so there you go.
The night after, yeah. I had this and the Survivor Series 1990 taped back-to-back on the same VHS.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like on your own VHS? Or like
Okay. Yep.
Gotcha. But we're talking about the main event. And I know you're like, what, the main event, like the show that they have on WWE Network today that nobody watches? No. The main event.
By the way, that Retribution is on now.
Oh.
They're wrestling on main event.
Oh, my God. That is just unreal. 3 hours of TV, and then you can't get them on TV? That's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
I figured they would have a Survivor Series match. They didn't even have a Survivor Series match.
Nope.
What the hell? That is worse than what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
It was going to be bad. I figured they would at least have a Survivor Series match, but whatever.
Mm-mm-mm.
We're talking about 1990. We're talking about the main event. They taped it October 30th, 1990, like I said earlier. It aired November 23rd. And, of course, like I said, the show is known for the tag title match that never was between the Hart Foundation and the Rockers. But the actual show itself, a good amount happened on this show, and it's a short watch. Fortunately, it's only 48 minutes on the WWE Network, but there was some entertaining stuff that happened on the show. I don't know, you know, if you had some thoughts about the show, you know, before we dive into it.
Absolutely, one of my very first wrestling shows, and you know, when you're 5 years old, just getting into, you know, pro wrestling, you can't just watch one show and understand everything going on, so. You know, I'm learning, okay, the Ultimate Warrior is a good guy. People love him. He's the champion. And he was the first champion I ever saw in pro wrestling. So it was really cool to see him, you know, come out first, Ted DiBiase. And remember, like, Survivor Series 1990 was the first pay-per-view I watched live. So I saw WrestleMania 6, but that was after, like, months after. I was at SummerSlam 1990, so I didn't see that live, like, on TV. And as a kid, like, tried to remember as much as I can being there in person. So Survivor Series 90, was the first show that I ever watched live in front of my TV. I'm not even sure my parents knew that, like, the main event was the next night. They showed it twice during the pay-per-view that, hey, tomorrow night on NBC, Ultimate Warrior defends the title against Ted DiBiase. So that's, you know, they saw that, and thankfully they taped it after Survivor Series 90 on the same tape. So I watched it, like, ad nauseum. That was my... probably the tape I watch the most. That's why Survivor Series to me means a lot different than it does to you. It's one of those things where, okay, Thanksgiving, it was Thanksgiving night that year, and then the day after, that Friday night, it was the main event, and those two shows are just, like, ingrained in my mind, because it was, you know, the beginning of my fandom. And so seeing, like, even the, you know, Macho King appearance and Jake Roberts with that eye and everything about this show is so nostalgic to me, and I can't wait to dive into it.
You got sentimental reasons for liking Survivor Series. I just don't have those sentimental reasons whatsoever. But let's dive into
the show. I always love the logo, by the way. Like, the classic logo was one of my favorites.
No, that's probably the best part about Survivor Series to this day, is the classic Survivor Series logo. You're 100% correct. That is a dope logo. And they should probably bring it back, because the new one, I don't know. There's nothing for me.
It's so plain. Like,
they make the V's really long. Okay.
What is this? Don't know why. Fangs or something, but there's no...
I don't know.
It doesn't even make sense.
It's a trash logo for a trash show. It's fitting.
There you go.
So, there you go. We start off the show, the main event, not Survivor Series, the main event, with an interview with Gene Okerlund and Ted DiBiase. Gene Okerlund is running down the dastardly deeds that Ted DiBiase has done over the years.
And these
including...
were the first... I'm sorry to interrupt you. These are the first time I'm seeing this, too, like, as a fan. And I was like, wow, Ted DiBiase really did that stuff. And these were things that happened, like, a year or two prior. Like, they weren't just leading up to this show. Like... They were showing highlights from, like, 2 or 3 years prior. So
this was when DiBiase had first... Some of these was, like, from his debut. Like, when he was debuting. Like, I think when he kicked the kids out the pool.
Yeah, that was
when he was first becoming the Million Dollar Man, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
So I think. Because I remember they had the little... I don't know if you've seen it, but the vignette of him, like, riding in the car. And just doing different stuff with him. I'm pretty sure that's, like, right as he was debuting. That little vignette. Yeah. It's a classic vignette of him... doing, like, terrible things to people. By the way, this show took place in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So, you know, the massive metropolis of Fort Wayne, Indiana, at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. So
there you go.
There's that.
But vignette of him kicking the basketball away from the little kid, bouncing it, man.
Classic stuff.
If he does that to me, I'm kicking him.
That poor black kid, man. I just felt it's like a microcosm of how America has treated black people in this country. It's like they give us the ball, say, "Hey, you can do this, you'll be successful," and they kick it right out of our hands. It's like, "Oh, well, you messed up, kid. It's your fault, not my fault for kicking it out of your hands."
Yeah,
man. But that's like me going into my woke side right there, but. In reality, it was a fantastic heel move by Ted DiBiase. And if I was that kid's mom, I couldn't see how Mom Dukes couldn't cuss him out right then and there. Like, I'm surprised she didn't cuss him out. Like, are you gonna kick the ball out my son's hands, my baby's hands? Are you for real? It would have been on. I don't. She is nice.
Was she even there? Like, I don't.
I remember when they took him off the stage, they showed him walking off the stage.
See, that's
I'm pretty
thing.
Sure his
I
mom
remember,
was right there.
I don't remember watching the whole vignette.
Oh,
I'd seen it before, but it's been, like, so long that I watched the entire vignette. Because I did. I think they're on YouTube even. Like, I remember watching a lot of these in their full vignette. But the first time I ever saw it was this show and when they were just showing, like, those clips. So
classic stuff.
That's what I remember the most.
He made a person kiss his feet for money who, one of those people, turned out to be Rob Van Dam. It's like wild stuff. It's just this is wild. Ted DiBiase was a great heel back in the day.
He really was.
He's kind of a heel today because his son and his ministry is involved in that welfare scandal in Mississippi where there's embezzling money in one of the poorest states in the union, they're taking money out of the welfare fund. How terrible is that? But
probably why he wasn't at Survivor Series.
Probably not. I mean, it was reported earlier this year, but still, just right. Awful. I don't know if Ted DiBiase himself, I mean, he probably did. I don't know, but it's really surrounding his son, Brett DiBiase.
Yeah.
Just awful stuff. Come on, man. One of the poorest states in the damn union. They're going to take money out of the welfare fund of people who actually need that money. That's a damn shame. I hope all those people are in jail right now. But
I'm with you.
But again, DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, is a character. Great heel. They also talked about him hiring the manager, not the manager, the referee, and paying for his plastic surgery so he can screw over Hulk Hogan at the Saturday Night's main event.
Man, how confused was I? I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? The Ultimate Warrior's champion. You know, 5 years old. I'm not understanding that there was a champion before the Ultimate Warrior. So I'm like so confused why they're showing Hogan. And then the two referees. So like I loved reliving this part of the show.
How classic of an angle is the plastic surgeon referee? Like, in reality, of course, it was Earl Hebner, because who was the other Hebner?
Dave
Hebner. He was there first. Dave Hebner.
Yeah.
And Earl came second. But so in reality, it's just they were twins. You know, they. But in the story, which is just like this probably will only work in 1989. Or 88, whenever it happened, right? It was 88, because it went into 89 with WrestleMania 4. So, 88, right? Damn, that was...
Yeah,
because that went into WrestleMania 4.
Mm-hmm. So it's
WrestleMania 5 was in 1989,
February 88, around that time. That was like that big... the very first, the main event. How about that?
Wow. I thought it was Saturday Night's main event, but you're right. It was the main event. Mm-hmm. But how classic of an angle was that? Like... That could only work in the late 80s, I should say.
Yeah.
Because today, everybody would know that Hebner had a twin already. Like, they would have already seen this twin referee on the Independence or on another promotion somewhere. People would have already known that. And I think people would have cracked on it. It's like, what? Really? Plastic surgery? What? Like, that's not how plastic surgery works. You can't just make him look like somebody else. Like, you know, what is this? Face off? Like, what is this?
Yeah, absolute classic. I loved it. I relived it for the very first time. Even before the WWE Network, I had actually ordered like a Saturday Night's main event collection, and it had like the main event in it from like a tape trader or whatever. And I remember that was one of the shows I watched first because I had heard about it, but I've never seen it. And that was before YouTube was real big. There weren't like shows on YouTube. There weren't even like clips of wrestling on YouTube that much. So... watching that show like from start to finish was like awesome. I was like, wow, like this is the first time I'm watching it, and it really was one of the coolest wrestling angles in the 80s, if not of all time.
That's a brilliant angle for that time period, at least. I think today I think it would get laughed at and mocked, but back then I'm assuming people didn't know that much about plastic surgery. They're just like, you could change someone's whole face and like make it look like somebody else. And, of course, because it was the 80s and people didn't know that Dave Hebner had a twin, so it just worked perfectly. It was, and, of course, DiBiase would buy his way to the title. It was just it was just fantastic stuff. And while Gene Okerlund was talking about it, you could just hear Ted DiBiase just laughing maniacally at all the stuff he did. So proud of himself. It was so great. I thought it was hilarious.
One of the greatest, I probably could not have become a wrestling fan at a better time to get lost in like that world, you know, like to really think that this stuff was happening in real life and just, you know, be in that bubble and just think that, oh, well, I hope he gets his type of thing. And it was great. I loved it.
It's so wild. Like, it's so like, even to this day, it's still one of the wildest, hilarious angles in wrestling history. It's hysterical that he paid for someone to change their whole face. Like, how crazy is that? Change the whole face. You imagine taking money to get your whole face changed to look like a Hebner. Not like look like the sexiest man on the planet. No, I'm gonna look like Dave Hebner because he paid me untold amounts of money. That's wild stuff.
He is the better Hebner, so I can buy that.
Okay, I'm not going. We're not going to get into.
We're all this, sucks.
Here we go. We switch from Ted DiBiase's interview to now Sean Mooney, who's a great interviewer back in the day.
Man,
better than Todd Pettengill.
Nah.
He's interviewing the Warrior, who of course is a WWE champion. He's got the black strap. No, like, purple or white or yellow, just a black strap. But I wrote down that this is probably one of the best promos I've ever heard from the Ultimate Warrior.
It is. It's a sleeper. And,
like, he wasn't going crazy, and things he said made sense. Like, you can't buy your way into this, you can't buy your way into that. There's no amount of money that can, you know, how much are you willing to pay?
My favorite. Bankrolls do not build biceps. Love it.
I mean, they can if you got money for steroids. They kinda can, actually.
But that was a great line. You had the alliteration. No, it was. And everything.
I don't know if somebody wrote that for him or if he came up with it himself.
I doubt he wrote it.
I don't know. I mean, back, it's still back in the, you know, it's 1990. They didn't have writers yet. But
maybe Sean Mooney wrote it for him.
Maybe. I don't know. Either way, I thought it was a really dope promo from Ultimate Warrior. It made sense. You know, given who he's talking about, and I can actually hear what he's saying. He's not just incoherent and yelling.
Yep.
I was like, damn, this is probably, like I said, the best promo I've ever heard from Warrior.
One of my favorite moments of this is when he puts his arms in the air and he's like, the blood flowing through these veins. And then all you see is the microphone held by Sean Mooney's hand, and you see it move like all the way up the top.
He's got to reposition the microphone. Yeah,
I paid attention more to that than the actual interview because I thought it was hilarious. I saw the microphone move like a million times, and Sean Mooney trying to do his best to be professional at that time because he was just moving it, and it just made me laugh.
Sean Mooney was a beast, bro. He was nice.
Yeah, he was good.
He's professional. Moving that microphone around real quick. And we didn't even miss a word of what the Warrior was saying.
He did not.
We didn't even miss a syllable of what he was saying. We got everything because Sean Mooney was moving that microphone around all fast. It was, man, look, he knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. We cut to the actual show now in the arena. But then we see Vince McMahon and Roddy Piper, who are calling the action, clearly in front of a green screen. They are not in the arena. Okay, they were in the arena, at least calling this live.
I could not tell.
This aired after the fact, like I said earlier. So they were in, I guess, WWE's television studios in front of a green screen, pretending that they were actually in the arena. So very obviously a green screen, though. That's the funny part about this. And I wrote down in this opening that Roddy Piper made a Roseanne joke. Which, like, damn,
he's sitting there eating like these turkey legs and
making a mess,
and he's like, if I have another bite of this, I'll look like Roseanne Barr. And I didn't know who the hell that was, so I was like, okay.
Yeah, I don't care.
And it was like, obviously I could tell it's a green screen now, but man, back then I was like, so hyped up. I was like, yeah, they're there. It's after Thanksgiving. It made me want to go get, turkey, some leftover turkey. But I did not, because my mom wanted.
You didn't have an HDTV back in the day, so you couldn't tell fully that it was
right,
a green screen.
Exactly.
I got HD on my computer, and I can tell, like, oh, yeah, that's a green screen, pal.
But, yeah, it was. And what's funny is, I don't think they mentioned Survivor Series but once, the whole show. They didn't.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember it being mentioned much neither. Yeah, I guess they couldn't because they taped the show, and they taped, I guess, the commentary before Survivor Series happened.
Right, which is just kind of crazy to think about nowadays, like how that's, like, we know these things now, and we can put into place using our own knowledge of when they must have done this and put this stuff together. So they don't even mention the word Survivor Series only happened, I think, once in like a promo later in the show by a wrestler. But Vince never said the name Survivor Series. Roddy Piper never said Survivor Series. Nobody did. And it's funny to think about because it aired the day after. And I remember thinking it was kind of weird, like, oh, aren't they going to talk about what happened at the pay-per-view? You know, as, even as a five-year-old, I thought at least, you know, we would get some of that. But, you know, they didn't mention it at all.
No, that makes sense. And they could have probably done something like maybe show some highlights, something like that. But or not really show highlights because they didn't want to give away any footage because the pay-per-view,
yeah,
you know, was obviously a massive thing back then. So they could have, like, I don't know, they maybe could have spliced something in there.
It was like no mention of Hogan either. It was crazy.
Nothing. It was, like I said, maybe one time they mentioned it, and that was about it. So now we get into the match. The opening match on this telecast, at least.
My favorite part is when Ultimate Warrior's music hits. And you see...
Well, his music hit because he is putting up the WWE Championship. He's defending the WWE Championship in the opening match against Ted DiBiase. And it's like, okay, well, I guess they put this on first so they can put the... Well, I guess the tag title match is technically a dark match, right?
Yeah, because
it didn't... on another show.
Because it didn't air... No, it was going to air on... It probably would have aired on this night, but I think they just... Maybe they added another match after it to kind of, for timing purposes, or maybe it's just like kind of like a three-hour event and they just edit it down to like a few matches. I don't know.
Yeah, that probably would have been the main event. Yeah. Of this here thing, because it wasn't like outside the realm of possibility that the tag titles or tag match would be in the main event. Well, and like a warrior match with a championship would go on like in the middle, so he can get out of there. You know,
well, these even the main event and Saturday Night's main event would always have that top match first. They would, like, I guess, want to draw that audience, and they would try to keep them through the end. They wouldn't have, like, that title match at the end. So, well, yeah, they would,
I think
the tag title match probably would have been at the end.
To me, ideally, you would put it in the main event so you keep people watching. Like, oh, I want to see Warrior. I got to stick around and watch Warrior the whole time.
Yeah.
I think it's more because they were shooting these during these live events, and the championship, the WWF championship at least, would go on sometimes in the middle. So... I guess they didn't work around that and put it at the end or whatever. I don't know. But you bring up a good point that it was always kind of at the beginning. But here we are, WWE Championship right off the top. And I wrote down that this match was actually very, very good. Like, I really enjoyed this match. And maybe because both guys were over. They really loved Ultimate Warrior. They really hated Ted DiBiase. But there was just, like, just good stuff happening in this match. And I guess, you know, DiBiase was a big part of that. Obviously, because he could work. Warrior, I mean, he did what he could. You know, he was never perfect. You know, no pun intended to Mr. Perfect. But I don't know about you, but this is probably my favorite match in the show. I thought it was excellent, actually, at least for this time period. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I knew that there was a chance, like as a kid, you know, watching it live, and I'm putting myself back not only in that mindset from what I remember watching it live, but also as an adult now, it looked like DiBiase had a chance. You know, he had Virgil on the outside. He, you know, it was like, could he actually, you know, nefariously come away with the title and do that stuff? So I was into it. You know, didn't really understand, like, the Warrior was invincible. I just knew he was like a bad guy. But so I don't know. I thought there was an actual chance that the Ultimate Warrior could lose. So I was like all into it. And Virgil getting involved, and I don't know. It was one of Warrior's better matches for sure, especially in 1990, where it was, you know, for me, I hated, you know, the Macho King, and then when him coming out, that was my favorite part of the whole show, what happened even after this match and before the next match. That was my favorite portion of what was going on.
Yeah, it was a lot going on, and like I said, they shot the angle at the end where DiBiase gets disqualified, Virgil jumps in and interferes in the match, so DiBiase disqualified, but then the Macho King, Randy Savage, comes down with his scepter and starts beating the holy hell out of the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, he's jumping off the top rope, people are like, and standing in front of him while he's on the top rope.
Yeah,
going like,
it.
no, and he just jumps right over him onto Ultimate Warrior,
and that's why I never understood, like, even because I'm like, okay, like that makes sense. He just jumped over them, and you see like the same angle play out in the future, and it's just, you know, they won't jump over the guys, and I'm like, but Macho Man did it, you know, one of the first shows I ever watched. Like, what the hell? It was such a cool, like, visual just to see, like, hey, I'm not going to let you stand in the way of me doing this. And even knowing he was a bad guy, I was just kind of like, oh, he's going to get his. I hope he does another one just so Ultimate Warrior kick his butt even more. So it was one of the coolest things. And Vince McMahon's commentary, man, he sold me on everything as a kid, man. Like, I got to give him his props, on, especially on that attack. Like, he made it seem like it was, like, the worst thing that could ever happen.
Speaking of Vince McMahon's commentary, I wrote down that, like, I'm not surprised at all that his voice is, like, shot these days. Because the way he called matches, he would always use, like, oh, yeah, oh, my God, he's the ultimate champion. Yeah. And he pretty much called the match that way, this match in particular, the whole time.
Yeah.
And that was like his, because he was just yelling the whole time and like really grating on his voice. Ah, yeah. And it's like, that takes a toll. Like, I can't even do that for like 2 minutes. I don't know how he did it for entire matches or entire shows, damn near. He was turned up all the time. And so you wonder why his voice is like, I mean, obviously he's older, so that's not going to help. But like, I don't think the way his announcing style helped either.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this was like, he even did it into like the mid 90s to late 90s, but this was like what I remember Vince McMahon the most. And me becoming a wrestling fan was commentary like this, because he did that. He even did it on like Superstars when the Snake bit Randy Savage, and he was in this element of how he called this match between Ted DiBiase and the Ultimate Warrior. Like, that is what always resonated with me, and how I knew what I was watching was a big deal. Whereas if I watched like a squash match and he was just saying, he wasn't giving that enough emotion, I was like, oh, well, I don't have to care about this because Vince doesn't. You know, that's what was going through my five-year-old head, you know?
Right. Well, that's fair. He was definitely good at, you know, selling the major moments. And that's what he was doing on this show with this match right here, with Macho Man coming in. Even Sherry got a good choke in with the Scepter. I was like, damn. Sherry was an animal, man. She didn't play any games. And of course, Warrior and Savage, they eventually had the WrestleMania match, the retirement match at WrestleMania 7 in early 91, obviously. So yeah, it was, you know, interesting to see it, you know, all playing out here in late October. And airing in, you know, late November. But like I said, I thought the match itself, though, probably one of the better Warrior matches I've ever seen. So the promo and the match, it's like, this was like top notch Warrior right here. I can't even hate.
Yeah, and so, it was good. They probably, it was like on NBC. I think they said it started at 10 o'clock. So like on the East Coast, it was like 10 p.m. and getting that out of it. I'm sure it was heavily edited. I even noticed, you know, in the beginning, you know, Ted DiBiase smiling at Ultimate Warrior doing the money sign or whatever, and then the next shot they have is Ultimate Warrior on the completely opposite side of the ring, like holding like looking at the title or holding the title. And it was just like, I'm like, well, that was weird, but I'm gonna just forget that happened, you know. I just thought the angles were funny and how heavily edited that portion was. So I'm sure like a lot of this match was edited, but hey,
maybe you're probably right about that.
It came across great, and that's what
matters.
Yep.
All I got is this. Like, that's all I got. I was not there. I was a wee child back then. I wasn't even 2 years old yet. So
you weren't critiquing, you didn't give this any stars, like one or
no,
five
no,
stars.
Not yet. No, I wasn't handing out a mark just yet.
Gotcha.
Give it a couple more years. Two things I noticed from this match also. When Warrior had Virgil up for the press slam and Macho Man came down and hit him with the scepter, and he had to drop Virgil. He almost dropped Virgil right on his head.
He did. He kicked him a little bit, but luckily Savage was in a position where, you know, he was able to get out of there, but yeah, I wondered about that too. I was like, man, like, what the hell was Warrior calamity doing? Like, come on.
That was near calamity right there. And also, after they finally get Savage out of there, Warrior really is really selling it hard, this beating. And he should, because, you know, it's wrestling. But he's, you know, it's very dramatic. Him trying really hard to get to his feet.
Yeah.
He finally gets to his feet. Like, he's a baby face. He's got to show that he's okay. He can't not just lie there and be dead and get stretched out or something like that. He's got to stand up. But it takes him a while. And he finally gets to his feet and he hoists up the belt because he's still the champion. And Vince goes, he's the ultimate champion. It's like, all right, okay.
I love it.
You're gonna take the belt off him in 2 months, bro. Like, it's all right. He lost at the Rumble, right? To Slaughter.
He did.
But he's the ultimate champion.
Oh, dude, I love it.
He's about to be the ultimate loser.
Well, that gave me goosebumps, man. Like him struggling. No, it didn't. It gave me goosebumps, man.
At five, maybe, but it didn't give you goosebumps today. I will admit, though, the people popped when he made it to his feet. Like, that was a big deal. The reason why he did it was for that pop. It made sense, and it worked. I'm not going to knock, you know, the method to the madness, but it was pretty dramatic. And Vince, you know, all in with the ultimate champion. Oh my God, he's so fantastic. He's the spirit of the WWF. I was like, all right, man.
Like, look at that bulge.
Oh my God. He was pretty much like a second away from saying that. Like just admiring his physique. Look at those biceps. He's so vascular.
That was the part they probably edited out. Post production.
Look at those veins, so veiny, vascular. Yeah, that took a weird turn. Let's move on to Nikolai Volkov and Sergeant Slaughter. Oh, two people, man. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing in person. Nikolai Volkov. I interviewed Volkov at WrestleMania 31 in 2015, and I guess it was later that year. And later 2015, yeah, December.
Yeah, the Army-Navy game, right?
Right, yeah. Sergeant Slaughter was in town for the Army-Navy game. He was in town for the Army-Navy game. Then he went to this was the show. WWE had a show in Philly. It was Raw in Philly. And it's funny because the WWE Championship just changed hands on Raw last week. And the last time that happened was in Philly in 2015 when Roman Reigns beat Sheamus for the title. Mm-hmm. So that show, Sergeant Slaughter was here, I guess, ahead of time to promote the show. And he was at the Army-Navy game and, like, you know, because he's Sergeant Slaughter. He was at the festivities for that. I saw him at Xfinity Live. I think you saw him down there too, right?
Yep.
So he's at Xfinity Live and, you know, I took a picture with him with a WWE champ. He had like a replica WWE title for some reason with him. And I took a picture. I still got that picture on my Facebook somewhere.
Yeah, I as well.
And then the next day, that was a Saturday, I believe.
Yeah.
Because then the next day, he was at the Eagles game. There was a classic picture of him with putting Vinny Curry in the Cobra Clutch. And I remember I got a hold of that picture. I'm not sure if it was an AP photo or if it was an Inquirer photo. I remember putting a photo up on our Twitter, on Philly.com's Twitter, saying that Vinny Curry was now questionable because of he got put in the camel clutch for the game.
That's probably one of your best tweets ever.
I was super proud of that. Please believe me.
He's now questionable. That's classic.
Yeah, I got to find that tweet because it was really funny. And then, of course, Monday was Raw. You know, when Roman Reigns
we were at that as well.
Yep. It was a busy weekend, bro.
Yeah, it really was.
Like, real busy weekend. So Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday. I'm going to look for that tweet right now. It was from 2015. I found it. David Mileletti from the Inquirer took this picture. And Vinny's got his tongue out in the photo. He's stupid. But I put Eagles Vinny Curry as doubtful after being put in the Cobra Clutch by Sergeant Slaughter. Period. So I did it. Yeah, I did it through Sprout Social. Sprout Social. Yeah. What a time. What a time. I made sure I put his David Mileletti's handle on there.
You did. Yes. I just pulled it up. It's at Philly Sport. on Twitter in case you guys want to go check it out. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that was all me. That was definitely all me. Apparently, I just looked on Twitter. Booker T is trending because an artist, I guess a Latin artist, named one of their songs Booker T on the album.
Interesting.
So that's kind of funny. Yeah. Oh, Bad Bunny. That's not just any artist. It's Bad Bunny. It's like the biggest artist. I didn't know it was Bad Bunny. I just saw that it was Spanish, and I didn't know who it was. But Bad Bunny has a song on his album called Booker T. So we'll see how that goes. I'm sure it'll be interesting. Back to the main event. Sergeant Slaughter, he was a nice guy back in 2015, but he was an Iraqi sympathizer here in 1990. Right, he's not about America at this point, and he cut the promo talking about how soft America was. He came out, and Volkov is waving the flag. He's all about America, and Sergeant Slaughter says, "You know what? Oh, you want to wave your flag, huh? Well, eat this!" Pow! Punched him in the back of the head and started hitting him with this little weapon he had, and he was beating the hell out of Volkov. Like it was just like merciless, just clobbering him with this weapon he had. And until, you know, that went on until Jim Duggan came out with a 2x4 and Slaughter ran off before Duggan can get to him. So there was that.
Yeah, a good nice way to build your number one contender. I'm not even sure he was the number one contender at this point, but he hadn't even started wearing that Iraqi head gear that he started using probably right after this, actually. Because if I remember correctly, and when we did the deep dive in the SummerSlam 90, that was really, I think, when Sergeant Slaughter came back as that heel. But he wasn't, like, fully an Iraqi sympathizer yet. He was just, like, anti-America. And then as the months went on, like, at the Survivor Series 90, he painted his face and everything, had the Iraqi flag and all that. And that's when, like, it was really, he was the Iraqi sympathizer, Sergeant Slaughter. So this being filmed about a year prior, that was a year prior. I meant a month prior. it was funny to see, like, one night was that, and then the next night he wasn't like that same guy. It was just weird, and it's weird like how it progressed to January to when he actually won the title. So it was just weird. Sergeant Slaughter was always weird to me.
Why was it always
as a kid? As a kid, like, nah.
Oh, okay.
He's cool now. Like, maybe
he's cool now.
Maybe
he called me a maggot at WrestleMania 30 in 2014. I was like so proud. I was like, wow. Because this is when, and I think I said this before in a podcast, but like, I don't really remember it happening at WrestleMania 29, but WrestleMania 30, they would just, for whatever reason, WWE's PR would just bring a legend through and like shake people's hands. I don't know why. And that year it was Sergeant Slaughter, and I was like, "Oh, nice to meet you." He's like, "Eddie's maggot." I was like, "All right, thank you, sir," and sat down. And the next year, of course, was Bob Backlund, and that's when I got the great photo with me and Bob Backlund in the press box at WrestleMania, and him with the missing tooth and all that. So I got a lot of history with Sergeant Slaughter for some reason.
Yeah.
Damn it! Not happy with your NFL picks or fantasy lineup? Luckily, we have you covered. Follow Fox Sports The Gambler for its Sunday service.
This is what we needed.
Our sports wagering wizard, Mark Drumheller, fantasy guru, Tony Jigsaw Cotillo, and Eagles insider, Victor Williams, serve up a Sunday feast.
That's what you do, TP!
Of winning players, picks, and everything you need to start your work week off on the right foot. Always tune into Fox Sports The Gambler on the iHeartRadio app or
102.5 FM. Moving on, though, to the next match here at the main event. Mr. Perfect versus the Big Boss Man from Cobb County, Georgia. And the whole angle, apparently, to this match was that Bobby Heenan, who was Mr. Perfect's manager at this point, apparently made fun of Big Boss Man's mom. He insulted his mom. He made some mama jokes at some point, and Big Boss Man took high offense to this, as anybody naturally would, and got a match with Mr. Perfect out of it. But Heenan was apparently so afraid of Big Boss Man that he was not at ringside at first for this match. He did not start out the match at the ring because he was so scared of Big Boss Man.
I love it. The storytelling is incredible.
It's so silly. For one, first, let me get into Mr. Perfect, though. Because if you want to see, I know people have said over the years, oh, Mr. Perfect was fantastic at bumping. He's a great bumper. This is the match that you need to see to, like, for hard evidence of Mr. Perfect bumping his ass off. First, before he takes one bump, though, I got to say, when he walked into the ring and tossed a towel to the ref, perfect. No pun intended. But it was perfect. Like, it was just like, he tossed it, ref caught it. Like, ref could have easily dropped it, could have went over the ref's head. Bam, right in the ref's hand. Like, it was nothing. It's like they had practiced it. They didn't practice it, I'm sure. Like, how could he toss a towel so perfectly? That's hard to do.
It is.
And I wrote down that Marks would have loved Mr. Perfect today. He wouldn't have been a heel for like 2 months.
Right.
Yeah. Because the Marks would have been cheering him in no time.
100%. 2020, Mr. Perfect character could not survive without being like the heel that he was. You know, like, it's almost like, I don't want to compare him to anyone today, but it's almost like an MJF who tries so hard to be a heel that people love it. And it's just because we know too much about the wrestling industry nowadays. But in 1990, it would have been perfect. Like, that would have fit right in with, now it's like heels have to really try and figure out what can actually get them booed. And it's getting harder and harder and harder, honestly. So,
yeah. Because if you're like a straight up heel, like an MJF, the people will eventually appreciate what you do because you're so committed. So they'll start liking you because you're so committed. That's what happens with MJF right now. He's on Twitter and he's clapping back at people left and right. People like, yeah, go MJF. It's like, no, he's supposed to be the bad guy. You're supposed to dislike it. But that's just how it is. You know, this is where we are with wrestling in 2020.
But then when Baron Corbin, you know, tries to stay heel, people are like, wow, he's just a really bad person. It's like, well, no, not really. Like, don't. They take it too far. They're like, oh, how could he say that? It's like, relax. Like, because there are people in the wrestling industry that do want to be in character more than just on TV. They want to, like, their social media to be in character, and sometimes they go too far. Sometimes they're a completely different character. But Baron Corbin, like, I like him because he's also one of those that he tries the part, you know, and he just doesn't get the respect because I guess people just like MJF more because of where he coming up in the indies. I guess I don't know.
No, but also MJF is really good at what he does. You know,
Corbin
that's
is
why
too.
People appreciate it because he's really good at it.
Corbin cracks me up too, but in a different way, and it should just be the same, but it's not.
He's better on Twitter than he is on TV because on TV, WWE.
Well, yeah. They hamstring everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but Mr. Perfect, though, would be a heel for like 5 minutes in 2020 before people started cheering him. Who I don't think would be a babyface in 2020 is Big Boss Man, though. Because who's going to root for the police in 2020? Who's going to root for the Pope? I mean, I'm sure some people out there would. You know, those Blue Lives Matter people. Mm-hmm. But for people like me, he ain't going to be no babyface with me.
For mama jokes, I mean, you're going to have to do a little more to get me to get behind you because you're just mad about mama jokes. Sorry.
Right. Maybe your mama is ugly. We don't know that. We've never seen her. Maybe you're telling the truth. But no. I don't think Big Boss Man would be widely celebrated and widely, like, appreciated babyface because he's a cop.
Yeah.
Like, he's a CO.
So think back to 1992 when they introduced Nails and everything and how Nails kept saying, you know, he was abused by the Boss Man, and they never honestly address that. They're just like, oh, he's just lying. Like, why don't you be like, no, this is, come up with like a backstory and be like, Nails is lying. This is what happened. I didn't, you know, treat him badly in jail. And he's just angry. He's just trying to get revenge because I put him away for a good reason. They never tried to explain that. All they did was Nails came out, said, you know, Bale's boss man abused me in jail, and now I'm getting
him
back.
He brutalized me. So, I'm brutal, a good guy.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, then I might want to root for nails because a cop shouldn't, you know, do that stuff. So what the hell? Right. And they never, unless I completely missed it, but in 1992, that would be hard for me to do. You know, they just never kind of explained that, no, boss man's a good cop, not a bad cop.
One of the good ones. One of the good apples.
Yeah. I guess we were just supposed to buy it, but
well,
no,
yeah.
No, it's wrestling. You explain.
People didn't know police brutality existed, and they still deny it, some of them. But yeah. People didn't wake up to that fact until this year, honestly, until George yeah. Floyd, unfortunately. Yeah, a lot true. Of people out there who didn't necessarily deny it, but they just ignored it for a long
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And especially in the early 90s into 92, we're talking Rodney King year, 92, yeah. and people still was like, ah, whatever. Mm. But it woke some people up this year, but there's still a lot of people out there who are like, oh, just obey the law, you'll be fine. I was like, okay, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay, pal. the actual match itself, again, like I mentioned earlier, Mr. Perfect. If you want to see a match where Mr. Perfect is putting on an exhibition and bumping, this is the one to watch. Because he got tossed into that exposed turnbuckle. Oh, no, it wasn't even exposed yet. He just got tossed into a turnbuckle back first. He just got, you know, Irish whipped into a turnbuckle. He came out, hit the turnbuckle, and did a front flip on the way out. Like boom, front flip. Then Big Boss Man, like, tossed him on the ground. And somehow Perfect slid all the way into the ring post and hurt yeah. his, you know, genitalia. Like, I don't know how he's just doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Then the bump of all bumps was when he got hit headfirst into the exposed turnbuckle. And he does this wild, like, somersault. Like, it was absurd yet hilarious at the same time.
Isn't that, and like, I remember, didn't you use a GIF for a tweet?
I was just getting ready to say it. That was the GIF I used a couple years ago. And the tweet actually went, like, kind of viral. Low-key viral. Pat myself in the back.
It did.
But it was about, like, I think it was the Celtics and the Wizards yeah. in the playoffs, something like that. And yeah. somebody got into a shoving match, and I put, like, oh, this person, this is how they fell when they got shoved or whatever.
Yeah, it was, they flopped or something.
Yeah, and I always thought that was Texas Tornado. Or a warrior who did that, but no, if it's Big Boss Man who did that. And he just went flying. Like it was just an absurd bump. It doesn't even make sense for him to flop like that. But it happened, and it was fantastic. I loved every second of it.
Yeah, it was great. I do remember that. What was it? Man, it had like 800 retweets in like an hour.
Yeah, it was wild. Like, I remember that. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it definitely picked up some steam pretty quick. So it's the second yeah. tweet of mine we're talking about on the show.
A lot of great wrestling related viral tweets that we have that we can even, you know, relate it to pro sports or even politics or something. That's great.
Oh yeah. That's wrestling. Wrestling is great for pretty much anything. Yeah. You can put it to anything.
Especially this era. This era, I think, has a lot more meme capabilities than current day. So,
I would agree with that. It does seem like there's more moments that stood out
yeah.
than today. I mean, obviously today, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, a lot of more gifable, memorable, because some stuff was just so absurd and so ridiculous. Like that yeah. bump from Perfect was just ridiculous. I mean, come on, it's just stupid but funny at the same time. Also funny was Bobby Heenan, who finally comes to ringside after Bossman has been tossed into the exposed turnbuckle by Mr. Perfect. He's out there now. He's giving his moral support for Mr. Perfect. Perfect hits the Perfect Plex. Big Boss Man kicks out of it.
Yeah.
Somehow in the midst of all this.
He kicks out and stands up. He kicks out and stands up. What the hell? Come on, Ray.
Yeah, that's wild. That was like, I don't know if anybody had kicked out of it before that.
Yeah. Maybe Texas Tornado, but that was maybe it because he had won the Intercontinental title from him. But By this point, Mr. Perfect was the Intercontinental Champion again. So that was really the only one I think that might have been capable of kicking out. Or maybe the Ultimate Warrior. At Summer Survivor Series, the Ultimate Warrior kicked out of it. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Well, Survivor Series hadn't happened yet by this night.
True.
Technically.
Absolutely true.
So there you go. But at some point, Heenan slaps Bossman in the face. Bossman chases after Heenan, but does not get back in the ring in time and gets his stupid ass counted out because he wanted to beat up Bobby Heenan. So Mr. Perfect wins the match. After the match, though, Heenan is still on the run. He runs into Gene Oakland and is just begging him to help him get away from Big Boss Man. I wrote here, Heenan was just so fantastic when he was like in a manic state. Yeah. He's like, he doesn't skip a beat. He's talking, he's breathing heavy. He doesn't stutter or stammer. He's just going and going. And he's like, I need help. I need this. I need that. Please help me. Please. And he's just going crazy. And I was like, Bobby Heenan was the best. Literally the best.
It's like, if you're trying to get away from Boss Man, why are you stopping here?
Right. What is Gene Oakland going to do? Gene Oakland's thinking about his next cocktail at the bar after the show. Yes. And he's not going to help you.
Classic.
Yeah. No disrespect to Gene Oakland. He liked to have a drink or two after the show.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure.
Nothing wrong with that. I would have done the same thing. So, moving on though. We're moving on now to something I never knew even existed. I never heard of this. There's another hinted to me of this. But this is easily something we got to talk about. The most talked about thing we got to talk about the most on this show is the blowaway diet plan featuring Playboy Buddy Rose, who I didn't even know was in WWF in 1990.
Yeah, I don't even remember seeing him like in action.
But in the middle of this show, out of just complete left field, there's like a faux infomercial with Playboy Buddy Rose where he is very portly. Let's just say that. He's a big man. I don't remember him being that big in AWA, but here he was, and he was pretty big. Belly was hanging out. And he's in underwear. Tidy whiteys for this infomercial where he's advertising the blowaway diet plan. He's like, they're pretty much saying you can eat whatever you want because if you just pour this powder all over you. And the visual is, you know, Buddy Rose trying to eat, you know, eating all this stuff. And then to lose the weight, he in his underwear, no shirt, no pants, sitting in a chair and pours just a bunch of white powder all over himself.
White powder, huh?
Look, I ain't going to speculate if that's what that actually was. All right. But it was a white substance, okay? And you lose weight with this blowaway diet by pouring the powder all over yourself. So, again, the visual is Buddy Rose sitting in his chair, practically naked, pouring flour all over himself. It's a disturbing visual. And then you blow away the fat by turning on the fan, and it's gone. And they did a before and after of Buddy Rose standing there with the side profile, and of course nothing had changed.
So,
which is kind of funny.
There's a funny story about this. That exact thing you just said, where he was, you know, there was a side view of him, and then they do show like a before where he looks miserable, and then the after where he's smiling, but nothing changed. I literally rewound it as a kid, not a 5-year-old. This was like later on, because they actually re-aired this during the Slammy Awards in 1996 for whatever reason, but it was it was on my VHS, and I remember putting my finger on the screen on the TV to try and see if it really made him thinner. Because I was like, am I missing something? Like, what the hell's going on? And hilariously, my 11-year-old self used my finger to put it on the TV to see if he actually got thinner. Because I was just like, what is this? And yeah, that was 11-year-old me. Like, I literally didn't know what the hell this was. I didn't even know Playboy Buddy Rose was a thing at that point. I didn't know what the hell this was doing airing in 1996. I was like, this kind of looks old. Like, what the hell? And it's such a weird thing to have on the Slammy Awards to begin with. So, yeah, that's what I did. I did a little test, the naked eye test. And, yeah, nothing changed. You're right.
The naked eye test. He was already naked, Nick. Damn near.
Well, I'm telling you.
I just... I was just sitting there watching this, yeah. Like, what is going on here? And it wasn't like WWF was known to do like comedic sketches or like fake infomercials at this point. Like,
not at all.
Not that I can remember. I mean, I didn't know this happened, so maybe there's some out there that I don't remember.
I mean, if anything, they probably would have. They wouldn't have been on the pay-per-views, and they wouldn't have been. They probably wouldn't have been on Superstars, but maybe on like Primetime Wrestling or something like that, where it wasn't. But that's all I could think of because, yeah, I never saw this stuff that
this
much.
This one was on a main event for a national television viewing audience. To
NBC.
See. Okay. NBC. I was just.
I don't know. And then they,
astonished. The visual of him. When they show, like, talk about your butt, and he's bent over.
Yeah, that's really good.
What you can see is he's tidy whitey's on, bro.
He's measuring it.
Oh, my God. I'm just glad there wasn't any stains back there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if there was, I'm sure they gave him a new pair. But
oh, man.
I'm sure they were very stocked and ready for anything.
Rest in peace to Buddy Rose. He passed away in 2009, unfortunately, but this was bizarre.
It was, and you had, like, the infomercial type thing you talked about where they had the phone number, and it was, like, 1-500-LARDASS. So, they, it was like, wait.
Lard ass?
Like, oh, wait, this is WWF God. In 1990, and there's... Right. They have ass on the screen? Like, what?
That was their way of getting around it.
Yeah, yeah. And they have, like, the Visa and MasterCard logos, but they changed the first letter of each, so it was Misa and MasterCard.
Wow.
They did everything they could to get away with this. It was just a really awkward. Apparently, he had re-signed with WWE at that time, and apparently he was wrestling on, like, shows, but I don't remember him wrestling at all, honestly. So
how do you not? I had no recollection that he was in WWF. At this point, I knew he was in AWA in the 80s, but how did this slip through the cracks of like the internet? I've never even heard of this, and like I've never seen it. I've never heard of the Blowaway Diet starring Playboy Buddy Rose.
So when this came up with you watching it for this podcast, when it came up, like what did you do? Did you have to gather yourself and rewatch
it?
Or
I was just I've watched it twice. It's weird because I did watch it twice just to make sure. I was like, all right, for one, what is this? For two, did they say Buddy Rose? Like, is that Playboy Buddy Rose? And I'm just like, what is this? Like, it just didn't make any sense. And like I said earlier, this aired on national television, bro. This is on NBC. Prime time on a Friday night after Thanksgiving. This aired. What the hell? I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Buddy Rose, he tried his best to make this funny, I guess, and make this a memorable thing, but what the hell?
And what the hell were they doing re-airing it 6 years later at the Slammy Awards?
Yeah, I haven't watched the Slammy Awards, so I don't know the context of where they played it, but it sounds like they played it out of left field again.
Yeah.
Just like with this.
Yeah.
The two times that this aired, it just didn't fit anywhere at any time.
And I remember, because I taped the 96 Slammy Awards, but I wound up taping over it. So I don't have the VHS of that. I do have the VHS of the 97 Slammy Awards, and I remember... mentioning it was either the 96 or 97 one, so Yeah, I researched it. It was definitely the 1996 version. So very, very weird. You know, when the Slammy Awards were right before WrestleMania at that time. So it was like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart ready for an Iron Man match. Here's a Playboy Bunny Rose blow away diet vignette. So weird.
This very serious, never before seen match. You know, you're going to get you ready for that by showing you Buddy Rose and his tidy whities.
Ahmed Johnson was the new sensation of the squared circle that year. Here's Buddy new Rose, sensation. Blow away diet. Yeah.
Right. He's weird. Covered in flour.
Oh, it's flour. Okay.
Look, again, not going to speculate on what else that could have been. I'm going with flour or powder. I don't know. Not booger sugar, though. We're not putting that out there. Okay. So, yeah, that was, that made me stop. excuse me? What?
It was
Buddy Rose, put some clothes on, please.
Just even thinking back to my early days of watching wrestling. And I don't even remember that. So even on the VHS I have now, if I ever am able to get it out of storage, if I ever have a working VCR, like I don't know if I'll be able to play these. Like I don't know where to go to play all these tapes that I have. I don't know how to if I could even convert them because I don't have a VCR to. I mean, I have a VCR to DVD, but my VCR is busted, so I have no idea what I'm going to do. But I don't remember this at all from 1990, and when it came up, you know, I kind of laughed at it, but then I was like, oh, this podcast might be a quick one because the show's not that long. And you're like, well, I got to talk about this Buddy Rose stuff.
I had to talk about it, bro.
It was that's what made it so weird. It was just like out of nowhere. And why? It wasn't like they were even promoting a product. Literally, like 1-500 lard ass. You gonna call that?
Yeah. What the hell, man? I don't even remember the number. I was just like thoughts.
I pulled it up. So
I was just typing up my thoughts as this is wrapping. I'm like, I can't believe what I just watched. What? I don't get it. I do not know.
He might have been a good announcer, like a good heel announcer, but.
I don't know, bro. I got nothing.
I'm assuming he was a heel. I don't know.
Based off this, I honestly couldn't tell you.
That's true.
Straight up dumbfounded. I'm still just shocked that I've never even heard of this. Not on like a podcast. No one's tweeted about it. You know how people tweet clips of stuff that happened in the past. And be like, what was this? Do y'all remember this? Not once have I seen this or heard of it. It's just, this slipped through the cracks. This is like a hidden gem right here. The Playboy Buddy Rose blowaway diet plan. If you haven't seen it, it's on the WWE Network right now. You can look it up. The main event, the fourth main event, is on Saturday Night's Main. It's under the Saturday Night's Main Event section on WWE Network. November 23rd, 1990. You know, almost 30 years to the day.
It does have its own, you know, like timeline. You know, jump to, so
oh my
just
god,
scroll down if you're the on time stamp. iPad. Yeah, it has its own thing right after Bobby Heenan begging Gene Oakland to do something,
right? And they didn't transition to it, just cut right to it. Yeah. There was no like lead in, like here's Playboy Buddy Rose, I'm gonna show you how to lose weight, like nothing. It just went straight into it. And it's just
I just wonder if what? They went to a commercial after the Heenan Oakland thing, and when they finally came back, that was the first thing they aired.
That'd be wild if that was the case. Like, right? You come back from, like, am I watching the same show? Like, is this still the main event? Like, what is this? This is bizarre by 1990 standards.
Yeah.
Like, people probably was confused if that was the case. Like, they came back, it's like, what? Yeah. Somebody changed the channel? Like, what channel is this now? What is this? Infomercial? What is this, like, QVC? One of those infomercial channels now? Yeah. I was confused as hell, man. And I'm sure people, I would assume people were confused back in 1990 as well. But we got to move on because we can talk about this for way too long.
Deep dive into the Buddy Rose pull away diet.
Man, it's just too much. All right, now let's transition out of Buddy Rose's butt and into the main event.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness, right? Our main event is Strikeforce. This is
the Strikeforce.
Where is Bobby? Where's Brian? I said Bobby. Where's Brian Isley when we need him?
Right?
Maybe because he's black and he's bald, I thought of Bobby Lashley. I don't know. You know, those bald black brothers, we all looking like. Well, not we all. I'm not bald. I'm far from it. But no, this is like far Brian Eyes
it.
Is like.
Far from it.
Right. No, I got plenty of hair on my head. Too much. But this is like Brian Eyes. This is like the match. If you asked Brian Eyesley what match he's looking forward to the most, this would have been it. Like, forget Warrior DiBiase. Looking forward to Tito Santana and Rick Martel, baby.
I wonder.
Strike Force.
I wonder at Brian Isley's school which side was the Rick Martel side and what side was the Tito Santana side. You know he was on the Tito Santana side.
They didn't have sides for this, bro. They didn't care.
This wasn't like the Warrior versus Hogan or anything like
that. No way. I hate to break it to you, Brian, but that wasn't. You know that wasn't the case.
I didn't even know these guys were tag team partners at the time. When I saw this, like, I would just, the model, the Rick Martel was always the model to me, like that. Mm-hmm. Watching the old shows, I was like, oh, they were a tag team? What?
And Tito had that, always had that dope theme music to you.
Yeah, yeah.
I was rocking out again. Tito Santana's theme music, low key, was a bop. Like, it was. Like, I think when people talk about, like, great theme music, I think Tito Santana's theme music should probably be in a conversation just because it was a bop. I was like,
yeah,
I was dancing to it. Every time I hear it, like, we do one of these shows, I'll just watch the show randomly, and Tito Santana is on it. I'm definitely, like, moving a little bit when his music plays. I thought it was dope.
I think that it was so weird, and yes, this was taped in October, but they also didn't make mention of Tito Santana being on in the grand finale match of Survival at Survivor Series. Even no mention of that. It's like, come on. I'm sitting there waiting for Tito to get his props because I'm like, hey, this is the day after Survivor Series. We're reacting to what happened last night, and nobody ever did. But hey, Tito Santana's here. He must be really good because he was teaming with the Warrior and Hogan, and there was no mention of it. Oh, I was so
psych.
I was he so lost. Annoyed as a 5-year-old. I was so annoyed. I was like, wait, Tito's supposed to be like a really big guy, like a good big guy. Like, what the hell's going on here?
They just buried Tito Santana. They just buried us.
That's exactly what I said. I said, Mom, I hate wrestling.
They buried him. How can you? What? You did the job for Rick Martel. Why would you? What? For the model? Get out of here. Tito's over.
Tito's over.
He's over, baby. But he actually was. Before I talk about how over Tito Santana was, I gotta mention that Rick Martel. I love the way Rick Martel like kind of cheated with like throwing the thumb to the throat instead of like a hand, and he would like tell the fans, "No, I did it with the hand. Or I did it with the palm."
Yeah.
And it was very subtle, and he would do it away from the referee, and the referee would be like, "Hey, what are you doing? I can't see." And he's like, "What? What are you talking about? I'm not doing anything." I just thought that was a subtle yet lost art that you don't see in wrestling anymore. Like,
not at
heels.
All.
Like,
not at all.
You know, it's just a little thing. That
they don't. It's like they miss the art of it. Like, yes,
right.
Wrestling's an art, but you have to convince the viewer what they're watching is like that they didn't see what they think they saw. And we don't see that anymore in 2020. It's like a lost art form. It's like, you know, I don't know.
And the lot less sleight of hand.
Yeah.
So to speak. But it's just like you can see him doing it. You can see him cheating, but the referee can't. So he gets away with it.
Right.
So that's where the heat comes in. So I thought that was dope. I thought Tito Santana's babyface fire when he fired up and was making his comeback, I thought that was fantastic. I was like, damn, I see why Tito Santana was like always kind of in the mix as a babyface because he was really good at it. Like people got into him. Again, it's something else you don't really see is that babyface fire sometimes.
Yeah.
And Tito Santana had it.
Yeah, and if you're watching this knowing that these guys were a tag team before, it probably even means Wardio watching it. You know, I didn't realize that at the time, but even then, you know, I'm sure Brian Isley was watching this cheering his ass off.
I was going to say, it meant a lot to him. We know it meant a lot to him, boy. And Strike Force. The end of the match comes when Martel gets Tito Santana and the Boston Crab. Tito Santana technically tapped out like right away, but I guess they didn't recognize tap outs back then.
They didn't do that.
He had to actually say like, "Oh, I give up," and that's when they rung the bell. So Rick Martel came away with the victory. Then we cut to a promo with Jake Roberts. He's got the shades on because, of course, Rick Martel sprayed the essence in his eyes. And they had this all led to this Rick Martel, Jake Roberts thing. It's led to WrestleMania 7, another classic match, in my opinion, from that show. You know, because Warrior Savage was a crazy match, great match. But this blindfold match between Rick Martel and Jake Roberts, I've mentioned it a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to mention it again. It's one of my favorite matches ever to watch. It's so funny. It's so good. And they barely touch each other for like 10 minutes. They don't even touch each other until the DDT, and boom, and it's over. It's just so stupid, but yet funny. I just thought it was great.
It's a match where you really, that the crowd made it. And that's part of why I love love crowd reactions that make me enjoy a match even more. And that's one of them. I remember growing up on like the message board era, and they would talk about how shitty that match was, but
I don't know why.
You know, you watch it now and you're just like, man, the crowd does everything. And if I could just not even remember the fact that I saw Jake Roberts' hand through the mask right in the very beginning when he was like adjusting it, and you could see like his hand through the mask, I would have fallen for every single thing, like, you know, just like that, like I was supposed to, but look, I didn't. So
for one, every time they got near each other, the people came alive. That happens because they're both over.
Yeah,
like going into the match, they were over. People wanted to see this happen, and they're just like, oh, and the anticipation was just, it was building. Every time they got close to each other, it was like, oh, and then, like, they were like, almost throw a punch, and somebody would punch air, and they all of a sudden they wind up across the ring from each other again. People were like, oh, God, they were that close. Yeah. I thought that match was brilliant. I don't know why. I'm sure other people disagree, but I thought it was hysterical.
Dude, the best moment for me is when Rick Martel's on the outside with the steel chair, and he's jabbing that air. And he packs up into the ring post and slams it with the chair. And
oh my god!
Sells his fingers. Oh my god, dude, that was classic.
He's stabbing at the end like, ah, ah. Are you there? Are you there? Yeah. That was so funny.
It was like,
oh my god.
Nobody could have done a better job than those two in that type of match at that time.
I just look, if you don't have an appreciation for that match, I can't help you, bro. And I know it's like some people are always comedy and wrestling. To me, it wasn't really comedy. It was like a serious angle leading up to that.
Right.
And yeah, the stuff they did in that match was funny, but I don't think it wasn't intended to be funny.
Right.
But at the same time, Rick Martel could look silly because he was a heel and he was a model. Right. So they could afford to make him look kind of silly. But it was a heavy angle. They thought, you know, they made it seem like Jake Roberts really lost his vision.
Yeah.
And he's walked around for months with the stuff on his eyes, like the bandages and the shades, like
the white contact that I was like, wait, he really lost his eye. Holy crap.
Right. Like they really played this up, and Jake really walked around for a while with the bandages. Like he really sold it even when he wasn't in the arenas. Like he was just out and about. He would wear the bandages on his eyes.
Yeah.
So this is a heavy angle that kind of got turned into a silly match to me, in hindsight, it was silly, but I don't know. I have nothing but praise. I don't know why. Maybe it's a guilty pleasure. I don't know. But this match, the Roberts Martel match at WrestleMania 7, is one of my most favorite matches of all time. It's so stupid, but it is. I wrote down though. This is taped in late October. This airs a month later. And I wrote, like, if this was 2020, this match would not have made it to WrestleMania. Like, they would have had this match at Clash of Champions or TLC in no time. Like, And it would have been the same exact, it would have been a blindfold match. It would have been the same exact match, same exact stipulation, but it would have been at, I don't know, you know, Survivor Series or whatever. Like, it would have been in somewhere in the fall, but it wouldn't have been at WrestleMania. So I just thought that was a an interesting, that was a, you know, interesting thought I had about this whole angle.
Yeah, you're right.
we end the show with a promo from Ultimate Warrior. So we're ending the show just how we began it. Or I guess we began it with Ted DiBiase, but we're ending in Ultimate Warrior, and he's cutting a kind of a quiet, emotional promo, and of course, eventually he gets up and explodes, but yeah, that's how we wrap up the show, with that and the turkey graphics from WWE.
WWF 1990, man, breaking state-of-the-art, breaking cutting edge. Like,
oh yeah, that was dope back in 1990, probably. With the sound effect?
I probably loved the hell out of that. It's like, yeah.
I'm curious as to who was the person making the sound effects. The gobble, 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 gobble. Like, who was that person? I want to think it was Bruce Pritchard.
Probably, yeah.
That's what I want to think it is. I don't have any evidence to work, to support that, but. Yeah, or maybe it was Howard Finkel.
Maybe it was Vince McMahon.
Maybe. No, if it was Vince, it'd be like, gobble, gobble, gobble. It'd be like a stern, like real, like hearty gobble, because yeah, you know true. Vince is a man's man. So
yeah, that's true.
Gobble, gobble, gobble! Damn it!
Yeah,
I'm gobbling.
I'm God telling
damn
you,
damn it! Oh, gobble, gobble, gobble!
I'm telling you, this Warrior promo really made me want to see him kick Macho King's butt. So I was looking forward to that match. I thought it was going to happen at the Rumble, and then like it didn't. But then it finally happened at Mania. But no titles were on the line, so. I think they did a really good job at building that whole feud, and I really hated Macho Man for the longest time. Really, up until, even when he was marrying Elizabeth, I thought he was a jerk, but up until he got bit by a snake, I was not a fan of his.
Oh, yeah, he had to move from after he got bit by the snake.
That's right.
At his reception. No, he didn't. No, that was after. At the reception, but he got bit by the snake after that, yes.
Yes.
No,
yeah, I was wrong. That's what I meant, yeah.
They had the snake at the reception, too, and Jake Roberts ruined that.
Yeah.
And then, he had the snake bite him. You ever hear the story about Jake Roberts telling, like to walking through the snake bite with Randy Savage?
Yes, I did. A few days ago, I was reading that.
For those who don't know, you know, they get the word that they're going to do the snake bite to Randy Savage, and apparently Randy pulled Jake aside before the show. It's like, oh, I don't know about this snake. How, what are you going to do about this snake or something like that? Like, he's paranoid about the snake bite, which is, I mean, understandable.
Yeah, I would
But
be
the snake
too.
Had been devenomized, so it couldn't really do any harm to him besides bite him. And Randy Savage apparently was like, I want the snake to bite you first. He told Jake to have the snake bite him first. He's like, Jake was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like hell you're not. It's like, if it don't bite you, I'm gonna beat your ass right now. Like, he tried to beat him up if he didn't make that snake bite him first, so he can, you know, be assured that the snake wouldn't kill him. I guess he didn't trust Jake to have to pull some funny business, I guess.
Yeah, right. And I don't want this guy to kill me now.
Right. But Jake let the snake bite him and to show Randy that, you know, this everything's on the up and up, bro. And that's when how Randy was cool with letting the snake bite him. But angry, paranoid Randy Savage sounds like the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life.
And I'm telling you, man, like we said, with good reason, because you watch that back, that snake was not coming off his arm. Even with Jake Roberts trying his hardest to get that snake off his arm, and it was not coming.
He got multiple people telling you, hey, the snake is devenomized. Like, you don't have to worry about it. Yeah. I think you can kind of, like, you don't have to force Jake to make the snake bite him first. I think that's a step too far, bro. Like, maybe you can trust the multiple people who told you, yo, the snake is devenomized. You don't have to worry about it. Like, cause I don't think they would just have a poisonous snake hanging out in the locker room or with Jake. Like, I think that would be a bad idea. Somebody might die. So,
well. Hey, Macho Man was just, you know, making sure everything was in line.
Right, like, for that night.
Like the goat he is.
He might have got a different snake. The other snake might have been different than mine, but this one might be poisonous. Like, no, this is the same one, bro. Exactly. We didn't get a new snake. Oh, man. So, yeah. That's that story. And that's the main event from October/November 1990.
It is crazy that they would tape it that far in advance. And I mean, no internet, you know, they did that stuff. And just nuts that looking at how they did stuff, you know, from how they do it now. So much has changed. And I love watching these back.
It's been 30 years. So, a lot has changed. Yeah, that's true. I mean, the show aired 2 days ago, 30 years ago, 2 days ago. We're recording this November 25th. It aired originally November 23rd, 1990. So, and it was taped over 30 years ago, technically now. So,
absolutely crazy. And I was living in South Philly at that time. I had a nice little row home. You know, I didn't move to Jersey until I was 6 years old. So, I remember so much about that house even before I moved. And watching a lot of wrestling in that house before we moved, and this was one of those shows, and it was awesome. I just love reliving stuff like this.
Well, it's always fun to do it with your buddy, and we'll do it again at some point.
Yeah,
some more deep dives. If you want us to do a deep dive of your request, feel free to head over to patreon.com/shootersradio. We will fulfill said request. So if you got a wrestling event. Or some other type of wrestling-related content, maybe Vader on Boy Meets World or King Kong Bundy on Married with Children or whatever the case may be, hit us up, patreon.com/shootersradio, and we will fulfill your request. But Nick, take us out with some other plugs, please, as we wrap up episode 261.
You can follow us at Shooters Radio on Twitter. Follow me at Nick Pacone on Twitter. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/shootersradio. And you can catch this podcast at phillyvoice.com. And my sports and this podcast, Philly Sports, I should say, and a lot of other cool stuff with Fox Sports The Gambler, The Daily Ticket podcast, and all that at phillyinfluencer.com.
I am at Vaughn M. Johnson on Twitter. If you don't find me there, you probably won't find me out here in these streets too much, but only when I have to, you know. You can find my writing on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Got a big story coming out in a couple weeks, I guess.
Ooh.
I'll just say I'll say what it's about. It's about the 25th anniversary of our win over the Cowboys at Veterans Stadium. I'm sure you recall, Nick, that when we stopped Emmitt Smith twice on fourth down, and Merrill Reese goes, "He did it again! We stopped him again!" or something like that. So, I'm writing a story, doing a little feature on that, because it was a big win back in 1995.
I was not watching the Eagles back then. How about that? So,
the first year of the Ray Rose era. What's that?
I was not watching the Eagles back then. How about that?
You were watching. I know what you was watching in 95.
The stupid Survivor Series that was on Sunday instead of Thanksgiving Eve. Jerks.
Yeah, I'm sure you watched Rad Radford and whoever else is in that show.
Yeah, Skip. The 1-2-3 kid heel turn and all that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great. 95 Survivor Series.
Bret Hart and Diesel. Awesome.
We should probably deep dive on that soon.
The wild card match. That was fantastic.
I feel like we've talked about that show for whatever reason multiple times over the years. But never deep dive or did a deep dive on it.
We did not.
So maybe it's time. I don't know.
We'll see.
But that's for another time. But for this time, it's time to wrap it up for episode 261 of The Straight Shooters. For Nipicon, I am Vaughn Johnson. Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and we'll catch y'all again next week. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there in the internet land.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.